Welcome to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. I'm here today with Dr. Bill Jenkins. He's Director of Emergency Medicine at Accella Frick Hospital in Mount Pleasant. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Jenkins.
Thanks for having me, Jen.
Oh, it's going to be a great conversation today. We're talking about some summer safety and some preventative measures you can take, because I know you get to see all sorts of accidents and all sorts of things come into the emergency room throughout the summer months, especially after the pools open and the barbecues start. But I want to start by asking you to talk a little bit, if you don't mind, about your background. Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? And why did you choose medicine?
So I grew up in the South Hills. I grew up in Pleasant Hills, and did all my initial schooling there. I am a Pitt guy, if you will. I went to Pitt for my undergraduate studies in neuroscience, Pitt for medical school, and did emergency medicine training at Pitt as well in the university program.
Any reason why you chose that? Were mom and dad into medicine, or
not at all? Actually, my
not
dad
at
was
all.
My dad was an accountant, and my mom was a housewife. And interestingly, I have two other siblings. One's a nurse, and one's a dentist. So we all ended up choosing the medical professions. But I actually got into EMS early or late in my high school days and early in my college days, and it was just sort of a natural fit. I loved emergency medicine, so that's what led me down the emergency medicine path. I was pretty focused on that from the very beginning.
Oh, that's interesting. And then how did you end up in Westmoreland County?
So part of our residency program at the time was set up to do a community emergency medicine rotation, which Westmoreland at the time hosted. So a lot of Pitt emergency medicine grads were at Westmoreland. So we would go and do a month there, and everybody loved it as a resident because you got a stipend to go there as well.
Oh, so
everybody
that was a
really
big
loved
deal.
It.
Yeah,
right.
Big deal.
So I went to Westmoreland and I really, really liked it. I really liked working in the community. It was so much different than the university setting. Ended up actually doing two additional rotations there because a couple of my classmates thought driving to Greensburg was too far. So I ended up working 3 months in the ED there in my senior year of residency, and sat down one night with the director while he and I were working together. And he said, what are you doing next year? And I said, working here, I hope. And he goes, okay, fine, you're hired. And that was it. I was in Westmoreland. So it was great. It's been great ever since.
That's great. Now, the you work with a group of physicians, right? There's a group of
Correct.
Physicians that rotate in emergency medicine throughout the three hospitals.
Yep. Yeah. So my group covers Westmoreland Hospital, Frick Hospital, and Latrobe. There's 20 docs and 16 physician extenders, PAs, and nurse practitioners. And we do 24/7 staffing in all the emergency departments.
Wow, that's great. Yeah. And so then, you know, you're sort of going about your merry way, and then COVID-19 hits and your whole entire life changes. I have to ask you, because I remember you telling me years ago that, you know, you were on committees for, remember the bird flu, and that was going to come, or, you know, whatever these pandemics were, but
Ebola.
Really, Ebola,
right.
And then never surfaced, right?
Correct.
So
correct.
Can you take us back to when you remember first hearing about COVID? Do you remember that? Was it in the fall of 19 somewhere?
It was probably early in 20. And I remember having my daughter was a senior in high school, and I remember having the conversation with her and her asking me, is this a big deal? And I said, and I used those exact examples. I said, well, you know, I mean, I can remember all the way back to like when AIDS first came out, mm-hmm. and HIV first mm-hmm. came out. And I said, I can remember all these things coming out, and, you know, they were all going to be big deals. You know, they just, as you said, they just really never materialized. I mean, obviously HIV in the United States did, but the bird flu, Ebola, SARS, I mean, those things never really materialized in the United States, even though we went to great lengths to prepare for them. And I said, you know, who knows with this, but, you know, history would say it won't. And that was a conversation that I think we had maybe in February of 2020. And then by March of 2020, she's getting sent home from school and never went back.
Mm-hmm.
It really rocked the healthcare world. I mean, there's no question that even when we thought we were prepared for things back in the Ebola and SARS days, I think we realized very quickly that the preparation was very superficial. And when it hit our health systems, it rocked all of our worlds. There's no question about it.
Okay. So now are we 90% through the pandemic now?
Yeah, I mean, if I just said to my wife yesterday, I think it's been 4 weeks since I've seen a patient with COVID in the emergency department, and we're still seeing COVID, but it seems to be now almost like at that baseline influenza level, you know, where we will occasionally pick up a positive influenza case when we didn't expect it, but we're not seeing anything like we saw. You know, I mean, there was a point in January of 2021 where we were half the volume every day we were seeing in the emergency department were COVID cases. And now, you know, we're seeing a couple, there's a couple in the hospital, but you know, at the height of the pandemic, 50% of our hospital beds were filled with COVID patients. And now there's maybe 20, you know, 20 to 25.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Takeaways from it. You know, now, how has it changed everything? I mean, has it changed everything you do and the way that you operate?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's changed a lot of what we do. You know, I think we realized going through the pandemic that we've spent years and years and years probably not adequately protecting ourselves in the emergency department. You know, wearing masks and wearing goggles were things that we just didn't do very much unless you were in the operating room. And I think there were some definite takeaways from that, is the things that we, you know, we maybe could have done differently for years in protecting ourselves. But I think the major takeaway has been, you know, how we communicate about infectious problems in or any kind of medical problems in the community. And you know, there's been obviously a lot of you know, politics around COVID and everything else. And I think we've seen, you know, we've built a lot of bridges between the medical community and the community in general through COVID. You know, I had more conversations with school districts and public safety officials during the 2.5 years of COVID than I probably did in 30 years of emergency medicine. So I think we built a lot of bridges. I think we've learned to communicate better. You know, we've certainly learned to do venues like this where we, you know, can have meetings with people online and learn things like that. In the medical community, I will never be the same. I mean, it's, you know, COVID has forever changed the medical community. We've lost staff because of it. We've lost the ability to get staff because of it. I mean, there's just been so many things that have changed.
Yeah, I mean, truly, the mass exodus from healthcare was intense, and staffing's probably the number one issue that we hear. Not just in healthcare. I mean, really, in
Everywhere,
any
everywhere.
industry. Everyone I interview on this show, it says the
Yeah.
same thing. You know, they're having a hard time, you know, finding people, and you know, that's the great separation, right,
Honest
from
to God, I
working.
mean, you go into a restaurant, half the tables are empty, and it's still an hour wait to be seated because they don't have servers. I mean, everybody is suffering from it, and it's been rough. It's been
Yeah.
rough.
So one of the things that we talk a lot about these days is how also our socialization has changed because of COVID, and staying home has become more the norm, right? And so you know, people are in their backyards this summer, the pool is open, the sun is shining, and then there are these trips to the emergency room. So let's start off by talking about the swimming pool, because I'm
Sure.
sure, maybe could you give us some examples of some things you've seen over the years, you know, that you say, you know, even if it's minor, here's how maybe this could have been prevented. What would you want people to know about swimming pools?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you know, the things that stick in your mind are the unfortunate events, right? I mean, you know, pool safety, especially with children and small children. You know, I can't tell you the number of unfortunate times where I've heard the statement, "I just turned my back for a minute." And you know, little kids are drawn to water. I mean, that's just what they do. You know, just keeping that constant, watchful eye over anybody around your pool that has limited swimming ability, because those unfortunate events, and it's probably twice a year in Westmoreland County or three times at the most a year that we have these unfortunate events where a small child is found in a pool. And it's literally, you know, it's never anybody's fault. It's just that, you know, life is busy and you turn your back for 1 second and there goes the child. So I think just keeping that watchful eye over those bodies of water, and whether you're at the pool or whether you're out at, you know, Keystone Lake or wherever you are, just understanding that those kids are going to that water. I mean, it's just what they do. You know, keeping a watchful eye on them. And then the other, you know, the other thing is just the safety around the water itself, you know, diving into the shallow water, and you know, most pools at people's houses are 4 feet, 4.5 feet deep. they're not made for diving. And those times when, you know, somebody goes in head first and, you know, then suffers a catastrophic injury to their neck and, you know, they can't move for the rest of their life. So just being super careful. We used to have a pool at my house, and I was the fun sucker of the pool deck community, because when my kids would have people over, you know, invariably I'd look out the window and there's somebody, you know, doing flips and somersaults into my 4.5 foot pool. And I would have to be the one to go out and say, no, you really just can't do that. And, you know, just being careful in general. Those are the things that stick in my mind as the, you know, as the catastrophic things that just never go out of my brain. The most common things we see, of course, are, you know, people are out in the sun all day long at the pool, and, you know, being careful with the, you know, sunshine and, you know, their level of hydration, and the simple, silly things that happen, which, you know, which are the sun exposures, you know, and sometimes the cut feet by something broken on the pool or stepping on the pool deck or something like that. I mean, those are by far and away the most common things we see. Just the catastrophic things that stick in my brain.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. That sun, you know, I think I was probably right on the end of the generation. You know, when we were in college, we were still going into tanning beds and things like that. I mean, my children would never think of something like that. And now the only makeup they buy has sunscreen in it. And, you know, so it's a totally different generation. I think a lot of awareness has happened around the sun exposure, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my kids, it's actually funny because my kids are all adults now and they never travel without sunblock. And the one that doesn't have the sunblock is me. Usually I'm usually using theirs. And, but yeah, I think our kids are growing up in a world where they remember us just spraying them or rubbing them down all when they were little. I mean, my daughter's a redhead. Like, she was covered in SPF 70 for her entire life. And she still has it with her all the time. But I mean, using the sunblock, I mean, you know, it's easy, it's simple, spray it on you and reapply it. I mean, that's the other thing. Once you put it on once, you're not good for the whole day. So don't dive in the pool, swim all day and come out and think you still have sunblock on. Even if it says waterproof, it's really not 100% waterproof. So come out, dry off, reapply it. You know, keep yourself safe. I always feel bad. We always see people come into the ED with these horrible sunburns, head to toe, just lobstered of themselves, and it's horrible and it's painful, and there's really literally nothing I can advise to do for it except for take ibuprofen and try to keep your body cool. So use the sunblock. I mean, definitely use the sunblock.
That was a great visual description.
Yeah, there, I mean, it's bad, and I always feel bad for people, and I feel bad that they come into the emergency department, and sometimes in the summer they wait to be seen only for me to tell them that yes, just use sunblock and take some ibuprofen. So it can be rough.
All right, let's talk about mosquitoes and ticks, especially around the water there. I was reading something like in the United States, there's 176 different kinds of mosquitoes. That doesn't make me feel any better.
No, there's a lot, and they all look the same, and their bites all look the same. But, you know, mosquito bites, I mean, we do in Western Pennsylvania see some mosquito-borne illnesses, you know, the West Nile viruses and those sorts of things. Although by far and away, the ticks are our biggest problem now. I think we have probably more tick bites and more Lyme disease in Western Pennsylvania than they do in Lyme, Connecticut, right? Than they do in Lyme, Connecticut, where it was originally described. The ticks are just ferocious in Western Pennsylvania. And you have to be really careful. If you're somebody that's out in the yard or out in wooded areas, you know, to check yourself and make sure that there aren't any ticks, and have somebody check the parts of your body that you can't see, your back and the back of your legs and those sorts of things, because that's where sometimes these things end up. If you get those ticks on you, just trying to get them off as quickly as you can. And they make little commercial tick removers. They're like less than $5 in the Walmart. And you just put it on and it takes the tick off completely. If you try to pull the tick off with tweezers, sometimes the little leg will stay in there. If that happens, just come to the emergency department. We'll get that last piece off. But the quicker you get that tick off, the less likely you are to end up with Lyme disease.
I'll tell you, I know it was October 30th, the day before Halloween. It was beautiful outside, and my kids begged me to put up Christmas lights. I said, it's October 30th. Who does that? And they said, well, you never do it because it gets cold and you don't want to go out and do it. So, you know, that's exactly what we did. We went to Lowe's, we got the Christmas lights, we went out, and, you know, there was one on the back of my neck, really didn't know about it, but was, you know, doctored at Westmoreland, and thankfully no zero long-term complications, which is great. But the more you read about it and the more you talk to people who've had Lyme disease, I mean, it can have lingering effects and permanent effects.
Yeah, it can. My son is a hunter and ended up with Lyme disease in his knee, and he ended up on IV antibiotics for a month because of the Lyme disease, and never, ever, ever saw a tick on his body. So at some point he was bitten and never saw the tick. But if you do see that tick, trying to get it off as quickly as you can. Typically, if you can get that off within 24 hours, your likelihood of getting Lyme disease is pretty small. So, and you don't have to go far into the woods to do it. I mean, you can find ticks in your yard, in your bushes, on your animals.
I was going to say, I think the animals too might have something to do with that as well. Yeah,
absolutely.
For sure. Absolutely. Yep. Well, you're listening to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. My guest today is Dr. Bill Jenkins, and he's the Director of Emergency Medicine at Excella Frick Hospital in Mount Pleasant, talking with us about summer safety. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Classic Hits 107.1. Listen live at WHJBFM.com.
Welcome back to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. So happy to be here today with Dr. Bill Jenkins. He's the Director of Emergency Medicine at Excella Frick Hospital in Mount Pleasant. And today we're talking about summer safety. We've already covered sunscreen and sunblock, water safety, and most certainly everyone talks about ticks and mosquitoes and how that is. I want to talk about fireworks now, because I am apparently married to a pyro technic, you know, wannabe technician, right? And so he is constantly, he is like an area in the backyard, right? Where it's like the designated place that's away from the kids and the bricks and everything that he has out there. But, you know, it is scary. Tell us the kinds of things that you've seen with fireworks gone wrong.
That's actually a really funny analogy. I grew up in exactly the opposite household. My parents were older, and like, we just never had fireworks in our house. So, you know, the most common things we see are burns. I mean, you know, it's the firework gone wrong. It's the one that launches sideways and hits somebody, or goes off earlier than someone expected. So we see burns, and the other thing we see are, some fairly catastrophic injuries to the fingers and hands. Oof. When somebody's holding one, they light it and they think that has that 10 second fuse, when in fact that fuse burns down and, you know, it goes off on their hand. Those are the most common things. The sparklers, and those kind of things, we'll see some burns from, and then sometimes some eye injuries from, either explosive injuries or just debris that blows into the eyes. You know, somebody running around kind of waving a sparkler and somebody gets kind of debris or superficial burns on the corneas of their eyes. Those are, I would say, the most common things that we see with the fireworks.
So basically what you just said is dial back the fireworks in the backyard, right?
Again, I'm the designated family fun sucker. My kids would tell you that we were never allowed to have any of those things. And I think as adults now, they gravitate towards them because they weren't allowed to have them as children. They're adult toys. If somebody's going to be using them, you know, it needs to be under adult supervision, and you need to be super careful, because some of those fireworks pack an incredible explosive power. Mm-hmm. And you do have to be really, really careful with those.
Oh, yeah. Especially as they relax the regulations for it. You know, there's more and more that you can get at home. Absolutely.
And more we're able to get the stronger and stronger mm-hmm. ones. So it's harder to.
Yeah,
harder to recover from those.
Let's talk about heat too. Do you see much heat stroke, or is that pretty minimal?
Yeah. So heat stroke is when you have a heat related emergency that actually affects your nervous system. Maybe one time per year we'll see somebody with heat stroke, and the usual culprits are. Actually not the group of people that you'd expect. It's not the person who's working outside in the heat all day long. It's actually often an elderly person mm-hmm. who, you know, we have a heat wave where we have 95 to 100 degree heat and high humidity for a week. And they got to get out and weed their garden, and they got to get out and do what they normally do every day. And it's usually an unsuspecting older lady that somebody will find unconscious in her garden, and she'll come in and her body temperature will be 106 or 107. Oof. For heat stroke, it's not incredibly common, but it is very, very, it is very, very dangerous and can cause some, it can be fatal actually, especially in the high risk groups like the older people. And then of course, there's again, the unfortunate cases where you hear either young children or animals left in cars that are locked up in the heat. And then those, you know, those folks probably succumb to the same type of injury with the heat stroke. Most common thing we see really with heat is are really more like heat exhaustion. It's those people that are working outside or outside playing all day long and they're not keeping themselves well hydrated. So, you know, they end up sick. And, you know, when you get heat exhaustion, you end up with nausea and vomiting. So you're already dehydrated and now you're vomiting on top of it. And you just can't catch up. I would say that's probably the most common heat related emergencies we see. And that's strictly based on people not being able to hydrate well enough. I mean, you just got to keep hydrated in the summertime. You just got to drink and drink and drink and keep that water going in.
Here's a statistic that probably won't surprise you. Emergency departments in the United States see more than 20,000 children for playground related injuries to their head every year. So, you know, it's a nice day. Mom and dad are at work. Grandma and grandpa take the kids to the playground. And I'm sure you see that more often than not, huh?
Yep. Yep. So, you know, kids are up on, you know, the jungle gyms or the top ladder of the sliding board or whatever. And they're doing what they do that, you know, they're running to try to get to the next thing. They miss a step, they fall down. They strike their heads. Children are disproportionately sized. So really proportionate to their whole body, their head is the largest and the heaviest part of them. So they fall head first. We see a ton of pediatric head injuries in the summertime. You know, the little 3 and 4 year old that runs faster than their legs can keep up and they trip themselves and down they go. So lots of pediatric head injuries. And you know, bring your child to the emergency department if you have any concerns. I mean, we're always happy to see them.
Oh yeah, I know. You know, taking care of the kids during this, especially I was of the generation where, you know, bike helmets were a must and, you know, oh, mom, I don't want to wear a helmet. Come on. It's not cool. The other kids don't have to wear a helmet. Well, you do have to wear a helmet, especially when you're riding your bikes in the summer. I think that that's normalized a lot.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and I'm of the generation that we never wore them. We never had them. The only people you saw in bike helmets when I was growing up were people that raced their bikes, you know, like you didn't see that. But yeah, I mean, now it's the norm. You know, I think if you, my grandson is 2 and a half and just got his first tricycle, hates his helmet, but the helmet has to go on. You know, if you get the child used to it early on, it just becomes something they do every day to protect themselves. And the helmets really do work. I mean, the helmets, just like on motorcycles, the helmets really do work and they protect the child. And often they have a big enough rim around the front of them that when they fall forward, the helmet hits the ground and not their face, and they're not coming in with lost teeth and everything else if they have the helmet on. So, you know, again, fun sucker number three, put that helmet on.
You know, I'm going to start it. You're like a risk management at a party. I might start inviting you just to come and.
That's why I don't get invited to parties, Jen, because I'm, you know.
No, this is great. Well, you know, and speaking of parties, we have to talk a little bit about food safety because I am the queen of they sell these wonderful pots now that you can refrigerate. And when you take them out, they stay cold for 6 hours or, you know, whatever it is. It's so nice. And it's really taken the pressure off of some of that, you know, the foodborne illness. So what are you seeing from food? Are people good about it or are the germs thriving?
You know, everybody, it's kind of variable. I mean, you know, I mean, we've all been to picnics where like you see all the food sitting there and then 4 hours later, the food's still sitting there and you're like, yeah, I'm not eating that. So, I mean, some people like you are better at it. You know, they have it packed in ice or they only keep it out for a certain period of time. But, you know, we're getting into party season. Grad parties will start in June and then, you know, 4th of July picnics after that. Food does not last very long out in 90 degree heat. So, I'm not exactly sure what the, you know, a culinary person will be able to tell you the exact time, but it's not hours and hours. I mean, you have to keep it cold. You have to keep it fresh. You know, if you want to have not good memories of your picnic, leave that potato salad out for 4 hours. I'll see you in the yard next day. You know, and you'll be miserable sick for 24 hours.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That salmonella can happen. And then If you do, like, have you ever seen several cases of it from one party or one restaurant or something like that come in?
Yeah, we have actually. I mean, we've seen some family members come in who were all at the same picnic the day before, and you know, they're all at home with vomiting and diarrhea. And then we've had some restaurant things. You were probably with us at Excella years ago when we had a whole busload of marching band kids from, I think, the state of Kansas or Indiana, mm-hmm. who ate in New York City before they got, ate at a Chinese restaurant in New York City before they got on a bus. And then by the time they got to Western Pennsylvania, they all had food poisoning, and we had them all here at our emergency department. So you do see outbreaks less commonly from restaurants nowadays, but more commonly from, you know, from picnics and, wow. and family gatherings.
Yeah. I do remember that. I do remember it because it kind of starts off like almost like a joke, you know, a busload of people pull into an emergency room, like it was real. I mean, it was pretty intense too. You had a lot of them.
I think we had 52 kids. Yeah. I think we had 52 kids, none of them with their parents, you know, with the band chaperones. And it started as 10 or 12 kids at 8 o'clock in the morning. And by the time noon came, we had 56 kids, but you do see it. I mean, you see it, it's still out there. So be careful with your food, especially in that heat, for sure.
Oh no. I think we have time for one more discussion, and that's about the boating. And I think we talked a little bit about water safety too. I don't know about the proximity to Frick Hospital, to any lakes or things like that, but I'm sure over your years, you've seen some boating safety, and it's no different than driving, you know, drinking and driving. I mean, how many times do we have to rehash this? It just simply doesn't mix, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, drinking and boating, I mean, that's going to get you into trouble. The penalties are as high or higher for actually operating a boat intoxicated than they are a vehicle. So there are very strict rules around it. But, you know, same thing, you're out around water. So if you have kids with you on the boat, make sure they have a life jacket on. I mean, there's rules around that as well. You know, if you're water skiing, make sure you have a spotter. You're supposed to have somebody, you know, if you have a spotter, if you have somebody on an inner tube or water skiing, to make sure if they fall that, you know, they're safe. I mean, there's lots of rules around, the safety, but by all means, just, you know, be careful around all those bodies of water, because there's just lots of potential hazards there.
I have some data in front of me from the U.S. Coast Guard saying 81% of boating deaths are due to drowning, and 83% of those victims were not wearing a life jacket.
Yeah.
you've got to be just absolutely vigilant out on a boat, for sure.
You do. You just got to be careful. You just got to be careful. And, you know, everybody wants to have a great time, and that's perfect. Just have a great time and be safe at the same time.
So as we finish up today, do you want to give a shout out to your partners in EMS, the ambulance, the paramedics, the EMTs, who bring patients in? I'm sure they do a great job when these summer accidents happen.
You know, our EMS system, really, especially in Westmoreland County, we should be very proud of the EMS providers that we have. I mean, they have, you know, especially the last couple of years, I mean, they have worked tirelessly and 24 hours a day to keep the county safe. They do a great job. They are out there prepared to take care of you and your children and anybody that comes through our county who gets sick or injured, winter, summer, spring, fall, whenever, they're going to be there for you. They do a great job.
They really do. And, you know, it hasn't gotten any easier for them, I'm sure, finding employees. And, you know, I just think about keeping up with the infrastructure and the technology, right? Because it's changing so fast. And these ambulances now are so souped up, right? I mean, we never had anything like that 20 years ago. And it's amazing what they can do just in transport.
It used to be the funeral director picking you up in the back of his hearse and driving you to the hospital. I mean, and that wasn't that long ago. I mean, that was really like in the late 60s. It has come a long way, and it has been very difficult for EMS services recently. They, like everybody else, are struggling for staff. And it's a very expensive business to be in for them. I mean, this equipment is very sophisticated. It's very expensive. You know, they're doing their very best to stay alive and well in our community so they can be there for us. But it's very difficult.
Well, and we're thankful that you're there for us. We're grateful, and we're blessed to have someone like you running emergency medicine at Frick Hospital. Dr. Bill Jenkins, how long have you been with the hospital now? How long?
A long time. I didn't have gray hair then, I can tell you that.
So that's a no comment. That's a no
going
comment.
Into my 33rd year. Okay. My 33rd year in emergency medicine.
33 years. Very good. And they're blessed to have you. Thanks again for being on the show. And thank you all for listening. If you have ideas for anyone who would like to appear on Westmoreland Community Connections, please give the station a call. We'd love to have them. I'm Jennifer Mealy. Thanks for listening.